is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Excuse me. The title of this installment is Race and Fraud, The Races of Mankind, Part 4. We're going to continue examining Ruth Benedict and Gene Weltfish's The Races of Mankind pamphlet, and I hope to conclude tonight. There's some loose ends from last time I want to talk about, and then we'll get into some other related material. I want to revisit something toward the end of the last time that I discussed. I'll just pick up here reading. Race prejudice isn't an old universal instinct. It is hardly 100 years old. Before that, people persecuted Jews because of their religion, not their blood. Jews have been treated differently because they are different, and they demand to be treated differently. The ancient cover story for them, which is a lie, is that the difference is just religion. But Jewishness is a racial identity as well as an ideological identity, and it's racial in the sense that it's inherited and that there are distinct Jewish bloodlines. The Jews are a group, and they're biologically distinct from other groups, and the fact that they have other distinct subgroups within them doesn't change that fact. Another section I read over very quickly and didn't comment on in too much detail last time was talking about people in the future. They will think we were crazy. Why should race prejudice have swept the Western world, they will say, where no nation was anything but a mixture of all kinds of racial groups? Why did nations just at that moment begin talking about the racial purity of their blood? Why did they talk about their wars as racial wars? Why did they make people suffer, not because they were criminals or double-crossers, but because they were Jews or Negroes or non-Nordic? And again, here's the Jews, because that's who's really behind this pamphlet. That's the driving force, is what's good for the Jews. The reason why any group does anything is because they think it's the right thing to do collectively. And they might have different ideas about why it's right, and they might have misunderstandings and differences about what they think it is that's right. Some think in universal terms, others think in more particular terms. But what we see in this example here of this pamphlet is that by a variety of deceitful arguments based on flimsy science, really just claims of science, and conflicting arguments based on religion, and you know, a whole everything in the kitchen sink that they could think to argue for the right thing to do, is what they were trying to do, to convince people that the right way to go was the best way for those who were afraid of being excluded. So that's finishing up what was mentioned last time. Toward the very end here of the pamphlet, it talks about how the Russian nation has for a generation shown what can be done to outlaw race prejudice in a country with many kinds of people. They did not wait for people's minds to change. They made racial discrimination and persecution illegal. Indeed, they did. There's a pretty famous law that Stalin passed about anti-Semitism. And I'll post a link to a reference here. But he wrote a letter answering a Jewish group in the United States about it being illegal. And he equated it to anti-Semitism. He called an extreme form of racial chauvinism. Not Semitism, not Jewish identity as an extreme form of chauvinism, but the reaction to Jews and their chauvinism is what he identified as the unacceptable chauvinism. And he said that active anti-Semites are liable to the death penalty. And I think that that's what many Jews would like to see. They'd like to see all of their enemies put to death. They go on in the pamphlet, no part of the Russian program has had greater success than their racial program. And by that they mean making people happy. And the truth is that about 85 years after, or 65 years, I guess, after this pamphlet was written, the USSR fell apart. And it fell apart along racial and ethnic lines. So that's the reality, is that the people were happier amongst their own kind and not yoked together as a conglomerate. So the conclusion at the end of this pamphlet is titled, "What is Being Done?" In the United States, a considerable number of organizations are working for democratic race equality, and they dedicate 4 to 5 pages to detailing the organized efforts that are being taken to enforce this equality that they want, to enforce their program. And, you know, earlier they had referred to how the Nazis had set up schools to teach people the proper character. The point here is that that's what you do. When you want people to think your way, you try to indoctrinate them. And the difference here is really just a difference of what's being taught, not that they're better for what they're teaching. They acknowledge that the Rosenwald Foundation has sponsored Southern Negro schools, elementary, high schools, and college in order to make up for the deficiencies of Southern Negro education. You know, earlier they had made the point about how the IQ differences were due to money, economics, and how the schools in the South spent less money. So it's interesting here that this is racial chauvinism in that it favors Negroes, Southern Negroes, rather than Southern schools, Southern education. It's not trying to boost Southern education across the board. They cite churches, and the argument they used on churches was race superiority or inferiority are unchristian. They cite the Commission on Interracial Cooperation. This is an interesting organization that was founded in 1919, in the aftermath of violent race riots that had occurred in the South. And though a local white Methodist church pastor was the head of the organization, it was in fact funded or with support from the Julius Rosenwald Fund. And it was formed primarily by liberal white Southerners, and what they did mostly was talk about how they could please African Americans, or at least that's the modern reference talks about that. They probably talked about Negroes in that day, what they could do for the Negro. It was all about what to do for what the white man could do for the Negro. It wasn't a give and take. It wasn't about equality. It was about the white man giving the Negro, sharing with the Negro. Julius Rosenwald was born in 1862 in the United States to Jewish immigrant parents who had come from Germany. And he established his fund in 1917 for, quote, the well-being of mankind. And the fund donated over $70 million, though, to public schools and colleges and universities and Jewish charities and black institutions. The pamphlet cites unions, and there's an anecdote here about how when Negroes were first placed on machines previously manned by white operators, a work stoppage shut down the whole section of the Packard plant. And the president of the union at the time, the UAW, ordered the white strikers to return to work or suffer the loss of union membership and employment. Within a few hours, the strikers were back with the recently promoted Negroes still at their machines. So, you see, when the argument that they try to make, their science, when that fails, they just use threats and sanctions. They cite the government as lending a hand, and mostly that was through justifications based on loosening restrictions to maximize the workforce for the war effort. I think don't let a good crisis go to waste is the philosophy here. Community activities. This is another interesting one. Two sections labeled community activities and just folks are these anecdotes about race riots, really. But they try to put a good spin on it by praising the people's reactions in these race riots and the heroes that protected people of other races. But the reality was is that there were race riots going on because there were racial conflicts. And in fact, on TV this week, I happened to run into a History Channel documentary made this year, or published this year anyway, that had a little infographic on the screen at one point that said, in 1943, which is the year that this pamphlet was published, there were 68 racial confrontations at U.S. military bases. That's just on U.S. military bases. That's not counting in the civilian world. But of course, you know, this documentary's point of view, it was biased and it was in favor of the Negroes, in favor of the African Americans. And the cause, looking back from today's anti-racist regime, is of course that it was all white people's fault. It was white racism that was causing the conflict. It wasn't a conflict between black and white. It was a conflict of righteous Negroes wanting fairness and equality from the whites, which meant, of course, shared access to white women and white schools and white jobs and white wealth. So the very final section is titled The Challenge, and this is their conclusion. With America's greatest tradition of great tradition of democracy, the United States should clean its own house and get ready for a better 21st century. Then it could stand unashamed before the Nazis and condemn without confusion their doctrines of a master race. Then it could put its hand to the building of the United Nations organization, sure of support from all the yellow and black races where the war was fought, sure that that victory in this war is to be in the name not of one race or another, but of the universal human race. This sums up the point of this pamphlet. It's a lecture about what we, and I write we in quotes, what we should do. And it's based on lies and wishful thinking, including the lie about who we are. The word unashamed there is a characteristic Jewish term. It's a red flag that this is a Jewish guilt trip, because they're the ones who are constantly trying to shame and guilt trip white people. And this shaming and guilt tripping has only gotten worse since this pamphlet was written. And the equalization of non-Europeans, non-whites, not only in the United States but all around the world, has produced just efforts really to boost non-whites, to give them special privileges, and it's come at the expense of whites and at the expense of the white race. So no matter how good it's been for everybody else, it's been bad for whites. So I want to move here now to a video that's titled, and this is, I had referred to it earlier, but it turns out I found it on YouTube. And this is based on the pamphlet, but it was published in 1946 by those ex-Disney animators, the commie Jews. And it's titled The Brotherhood of Man, as opposed to The Races of Mankind. It's called The Brotherhood of Man. It puts the emphasis on this human racial brotherhood. And it stars four characters, really. The main one is the narrator, and he has a very calm and confident and all-knowing scientist-like demeanor to him. You know, this is the Jewish communist anthropologist speaking to us. And then there's the white guy that's being lectured. He's kind of a rube. He's naive. He's optimistic. And he's the target of the propaganda, really. And then there's the Green Devil. This is where the Green Devil makes his appearance, and he's this ghost that comes out of the white guy, and he acts very paranoid and nervous and stupid, and he's the scapegoat of this performance. And then there's the non-whites, and they don't really play much of a role except to cheer at the appropriate points. So I'm going to play this now and make some comments as we go along. The title page of this credits, it says it was sponsored as a contribution to the American people by the UAW CIO. So that's where I guess the money in part came from to fund this. So let's get right to it.
Everybody has his own special dream of what the world's going to be like in the future. But we all know it's steadily shrinking. One of these days, we're going to wake up and find that people and places we used to just read about are practically in our own backyard.
It's happened.
So that's the white rube responding. It happened. Visually on screen, you see these what today would be called racial stereotypes of igloos and Japanese buildings and Chinese buildings in the outside the guy's window, and he's very happy to see this. And in this next sequence here is when the Green Devil first appears and starts to argue with the white guy.
Mm-mm, I don't like the looks of this. Why not? It's going to be wonderful. It'll never work. You can't get along with those people. They're too different.
We'll get along. We've got to. The future of civilization depends on brotherhood.
Yeah, so that's the people of color cheering there for that sentiment that we've got to do this. We've just got to. And as I pointed out a few installments ago, that's the assumption here that's implicit in this pamphlet and now in this video is that this is just going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it and nothing we should do about it. And we've just got to get along. We've got to share our homes with these people. But they also said in the pamphlet that this idea of brotherhood for a subset of humankind, for this racial strain, they used the Mediterraneans as an example, was hopeless. So this idea that the brotherhood of all of humankind is even more hopeless, as I made that point before. Another point, though, is why should whites or anyone accept that their future depends on anyone else? Why shouldn't we determine our own future and be responsible for our own future? So what goes on here, I cut out quite a bit here. I cut out, I meant to explain this before I started, but I cut out a lot of the music. This is like a 12-minute long video that I reduced down to about 6 minutes total by cutting out a lot of the nonsense. And one of the parts I cut out here just comes up now. The Green Devils amongst all of the people start whispering to each other, trying to manipulate each of the people that they come out of, and about not trusting anyone, and they start saying, and then the race riot breaks out. All of the people start fighting with each other, and it picks up right there.
Wait a minute. What about this business of brotherhood?
We're all different.
Are you? Let's take a look at the facts.
So yeah, let's take a look at the facts, and this is where they get into some of the a very quick rundown of some of the just so story type stuff that we've already heard from in the pamphlet. But note here that how the narrator giving us this narrative talks with a very authoritative voice. He acts like he's a scientist, and he's making claims that he's citing facts.
Right from the start, the first people on Earth knew only a very small section of it. They lived close together and looked alike. But pretty soon they started to spread out. And as they drifted further apart, little differences began to appear. Most of the people of the world kept the same in-between color as their ancestors, and still do. But three groups on the very edges of the world population developed distinct differences in color. These exceptional groups gave rise to our idea of three separate races of mankind.
Well, there are other differences in people besides a skin color.
Yes, you find all sorts of hair, eyes, nose shapes, and sizes. But you find these same differences within each group. It's only color and a few other frills that distinguish our three races. The Caucasian, the Negroid, and the Mongoloid.
So here you see it's a reiteration of the pamphlet's minimization of race differences. They lead you to believe that most people of the world are in between color, and that these three major groups are just on the edges. They're exceptional. And that it's just a color and a few frills that distinguish the races. So completely gone are the finer distinctions, the nationality and ethnicity that were discussed in the pamphlet. They don't even mention that. They don't mention the conflict, for instance, between Czechs and Germans that was mentioned in the pamphlet.
For example, there is no difference in physical strength.
Well, strength, sure, but what about brains?
There are some variations. For instance, there is a difference of about 50 cubic centimeters in the size of the brain of the average American Negro and the brain of the average American white, both of which are smaller than the brain of the average Eskimo. And the largest brain on record was that of an imbecile. So it isn't the size of a brain that counts, it's what it can do. And their tests have shown that our three average men are equal.
Well, actually, I don't know of any tests that have shown any such thing. But I'll note here that, first of all, they're trying to make the Green Devil and the Rube look stupid, crazy, or evil just for asking about brains. And they sidestep here the whole quality issue about intelligence and character and focus instead on the quantity, the size. That's a bit of a sleight of hand there. And this business about talking about the biggest brain on record being an imbecile is just one of these intellectually dishonest exceptions. You know, bringing up the exception as if it's the rule is ridiculous. This is a fraud. Biologically speaking and scientifically speaking, but even if it weren't, even if every race had brains that were exactly equal, even if every person had exactly equal brains, you still get terrible consequences if those brains think different thoughts. Like, for instance, what's going on today is whites think of everyone as their brother, or at least a great number of whites, more whites than anybody else. But the other people don't reciprocate. They don't. They have retained their tribal and racial identities, and they continue to operate for their own narrow interest, doing what's best for their group. And they think racially. They think of themselves racially as a group and against whites, and that's bad for whites.
If you take their skins off, there's no way to tell them apart. The heart, liver, lungs, blood, everything's the same.
Everything's the same. Heart, liver, lungs, blood. No, not blood. Blood's different.
Well, there are four different types of blood. A, B, AB, and O.
Patient in room 216 needs a transfusion right away.
I'll give it to him. I'm his brother. Stanley! He's dead!
Yes, but he wouldn't be if we'd been more scientific about it. Brother or no brother, what he needs is type A. And the right blood donor for him could belong to any race, since the four blood types appear in all races.
Well, except they don't. And you also can tell the races apart by looking at the skeletons, as we found with the forensic pathologists that discovered Franz Boas's fraudulent skull plasticity data just in the last decade. And at the time, even, they knew that they could tell the different strains of European race apart by just skull measurements. So this is a flat-out lie.
Say, we're not really so different at all. Like you say, it's just the frills.
So he's starting to become convinced now. And now we're going to hear from the Green Devil a little bit.
Only, wait a minute. I got a question. How come we live like this? And,
So the white guy's afraid to even say how primitive and inferior the aliens appear, in the video you can see. And this is not a good thing for us. This is why we need to just speak openly about what's going on and what's happening and not, act as if it's embarrassing or it's not embarrassing. It's bad for us that we act embarrassed. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. Our survival, our thriving is not something to be embarrassed about.
It wasn't always that way. For instance, at a stage of history when the so-called pure whites of Northern Europe were little better than savages, the darker-skinned mixed peoples of the Near East and Africa had flourishing cultures. The great civilization of northern China had begun to develop. All peoples contributed to civilization, reaching high levels at different times, and each learning from the experience of the other. But there were certain basic ideas which were common to all branches of the human race. Belief in a supreme being, in the home, and the family.
This is a more just-so story stuff, and made specifically to insult Europeans, the so-called pure whites. This idea that everyone has contributed to civilization is one of Boas's favorite ideas. And his students here are just aping him. The implication is that we should share what's ours with them, that we owe them in some way. And if the shoe was on the other foot, I doubt that the same argument would be made. These anthropologists want to protect other non-white peoples from whites impinging on their cultures. But not the other way around. They don't want to protect us. They want to harm us.
How civilized a person is depends on the surroundings in which he grows up. The differences in the way people behave are not inherited from their ancestors.
All right, that's enough of that video. I'm running out of time. So I want to say that that's just a flat-out lie, too. This bald assertion is wrong. It's an ideological belief that it's based on. It's not based on science. Personality traits, IQ, behavior even, are at least in part inherited. They're heritable. And even if they weren't, even if they were 0% heritable, the cultures are still different between the peoples. So there's no reason for peoples to mix. So the conclusion goes on and promises a rosy future and an equal chance so that we can all go forward together. Except we know 70 years later how that turns out, and that we're not all going forward together, and we're not all equal. There is no equality. There's an even stronger fraudulent assumption today that we're all biologically equal. Exactly. And even this silly video in the pamphlet would seem scandalously racist to the anti-racists of today, because it differs from what they teach today, which is that it's just crazy white people who ever even thought that there was such a thing as race. Let me read a brief section here from Margaret Mead, the obituary for Ruth Benedict in 1948 when she died. She describes this as: "The small pamphlet, The Races of Mankind, which she wrote with Gene Weltfish, went into millions of copies, was translated into film and film script and cartoon forms, and has proved perhaps the most important single translation into genuine popular education of the many years of careful research on race differences to which anthropologists have made a major contribution." This is what she calls careful research on race differences. It's really just a sloppy collection of outrageously intellectually dishonest insinuations and some flat, outright lies. There's no mention of genetic science, and so much for the science behind it all. Thanks for joining me. Join me the next time, please.